Podcast von Queer Up Radio.
So, everybody who's interested, I'm interviewing you, Torrens, the co-chair of European Gay and Lesbian Sports Federation, about Eurogames and about sports and problems for intersex and trans people. Anybody who wants to listen, join us, or listen from where you can stand and you don't get wet. Okay, you. Hello.
Hi.
When you came to the city and you saw all the flags, what did you think?
So, I mean, every time I come to an event like this where, you know, there's a host city who have been, you know, very explicitly supportive of the Eurogames and very explicitly supportive of our community, it's always a really joyous moment. It's sometimes a very emotional moment because I think the, you know, what that means is that the city is enabling us to, you know, express our queer joy and express our ability to kind of be free and be ourselves within the space that we create. And at the Eurogames, of course, that's within sport and physical activity spaces.
So we are Friday evening. Games are always almost done. Tell us something about the experiences you made during those 3-4 days here in Bern and all the sporting events.
Yes, so I mean, lots of people are here because they want to win medals, of course, and there's always lots of competition. But what I think is really, what's really powerful is the kind of very individual stories that people tell you when you meet them. The impact of sport and physical activity goes way, way beyond competition, you know, and it goes way beyond winning. So as somebody who is very used to coming quite low down in the kind of rankings when I'm competing, then, you know, what motivates me is, you know, getting, having a friendship group, finding my tribe, finding my community, and being around my people when I'm taking part in sport. And hearing that from lots of people here in Bern is amazing as well.
Hello.
Not everyone's happy, but yeah. But you know, one colleague, for example, which I think is a really great example, she met her girlfriend last year during the Eurogames 2022, and then yesterday celebrated their first anniversary. You know, people take part in sport because they want to meet friends, they want to find a partner. You know, that's all totally valid, and we should, you know, be celebrating that.
Eurogames, why are the games so important for the LGBTIQ community?
So I think firstly, we believe that, you know, access to sport and participation in sport is a rights-based issue. And we believe that, you know, being able to do that freely, to be able to be your authentic self within a sports space or within a physical activity space, free from discrimination, is a really important right. It's about the opportunity to kind of take that space. We know that so many queer people throughout their childhoods, throughout their lives, get lots of messages that actually sport is a kind of institution that maybe doesn't include them. Sometimes they don't see themselves represented. Sometimes they don't have that kind of opportunity to kind of, you know, see other people like them. And when you don't see that and you constantly get those kind of messages that maybe sport's not for people like you, then you can feel excluded from it without even knowing that you feel excluded. So it's a really kind of deep-rooted structural discrimination, I would say, as a first port.
Nonetheless, it's still a long way because there's many countries that can't participate.
Yeah.
There's many people who cannot travel. What can we do about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, there are many reasons why folks can't be here at the Eurogames. For many people, people in my own country, actually coming to Switzerland is too expensive for them. Coming and paying to take part in a Games, paying for flights and accommodation and food, and it can be beyond many people. So that in itself is quite a big barrier. One of the things that the organisers of Bern Eurogames have done, is to develop outreach programmes, which mean that folks who are in that position are able to apply for bursaries to come and take part. There's also many, many volunteers around Bern who are what's called home hosts, and that means that they've given a spare room to an athlete. So they've just kind of said, you know, we want to have another person from our community come and spend a week with us in Bern, and they're offering their hospitality that way. So there's those kinds of things. There are also teams, people from countries where you need to have a visa to come to Switzerland as well, and many people were rejected. We know some of our member clubs from Turkey, from Uganda, because the European Federation also has international associate members, and many of those people just can't be here because they didn't get visas to take part.
Okay, something we have to talk about is rules. We know that World Athletics and World Aquatics have the toughest rules ever for especially transgender people, but also for intersex people. Transgender people cannot participate anymore if they have passed the male puberty, transgender women. What effect do those rules have on the Eurogames and the Eurogames committees and the organisers of the Eurogames?
So first of all, at a Eurogames level, the answer is it shouldn't at all, because we are not bound to follow those rules. Many of those rules are instigated for elite competitive level, and they shouldn't be applied at a grassroots and recreational sport level. And that's well understood, but it's not necessarily always well implemented. And from a Eurogames perspective, you know, we continue to push to say it's a full inclusion experience. So perhaps that makes it a little bit easier for organising something like the Eurogames. But of course, there are constant pressures, because sometimes the organisers of a Eurogames might want a sport to be endorsed by a body who have these kind of rules, and there might be some negotiations there. So that can be tough for the organisers, but actually this event is for our community. And so to have an event that's not fully inclusive and doesn't have the kind of categories that allow people to participate freely would be an absolute misstep for us.
We activists fight those rules wherever we can. We fight with the European Council. We fought with the Swiss government, considering the Costa Semenya decision. Are the Eurogames a perfect example how sports for everybody would work?
Not by a long stretch. We've got so much more to do. At the moment, there are many non-binary categories, for example, but not every sport has that opportunity. There are not always the kind of numbers to do that. And there's still a debate about, is that even the best way to do it or not? So, you know, we're constantly consulting with community members. But, you know, I would certainly say that the great irony at the moment is, although we're seeing so many sports bodies move towards much more restrictive rules, actually the human rights framework from the International Olympic Committee is probably the best that it's ever been, and it gives us the absolute best framework for inclusion that we could have hoped for. The big problem is that sports bodies are not bound by it, so it's become a toothless tiger. It means that, you know, sports bodies can decide how to implement that, or indeed whether to implement it, and actually so much of it is not being interpreted in the way that it's meant to be.
Yeah. So everybody's looking for solutions. It's like separate categories, separate events and stuff like that. Just recently, Aussie Rules Football, I don't know if people know what Aussie Rules Football is, I do. It's something like rugby, but not really rugby. It's tougher. But anyways, they have implied new rules, and they don't just check testosterone levels of athletes. But they also take into consideration the athlete's height, weight, bench press and squat capabilities, 20-meter sprint time, vertical jump, game-specific GPS data, and 2-kilometer run time. A good idea?
I think it's a really bold and creative move, and I really welcome it, actually, from the Australian rules. I don't think we know whether it's the right rules yet or not, but I think it's a real move in the right direction. I think at the moment, because we've just had this history of everything being based upon testosterone, you're either in or you're out, depending on where your levels are, what we've been fighting for and pushing for is to say, actually, it has to be evidence-based. It has to be not just about testosterone, but you absolutely have to evidence why it's okay to be excluding people, you know, in this way, and it has to be based upon the kind of evidence that's meaningful. So at the moment, we're seeing lots of sports bodies basing that evidence upon studies that are done perhaps between cis men and cis women, for example, and they're then applying that somehow by extension to mean trans women. And so it's those kinds of evidences which we're really kind of starting to challenge and say that's not adequate enough in order to make those kind of rules and to develop those exclusions. So in answer to your question, I think one of the great challenges is finding enough evidence around what constitutes advantage and fairness and so on, that we can build the rules in a really meaningful way. And I think the Australian rules is, whilst we don't know if it's going to be effective or great or not, it is really a step in the direction that we've been pushing for. So I would be very supportive of it, yeah.
What the question I ask myself actually is sport in general fair? I mean, sport is not fair. There's always a winner and a loser. There's always people who have more money to train, who have more possibilities to train. It's a fight between the global north and the global south.
Yeah.
So talking about fair sports and making rules to have fair sports for women, I think that's really far-fetched, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think what's really... what's useful at the moment about the kind of human rights framework from the IOC is that it's saying quite clearly that, you know, we can actually achieve inclusion and fairness and safety as complementary values. They're not necessarily things that, you know, inclusion doesn't trump fairness and fairness doesn't trump inclusion, because all of that kind of very natural advantage exists. What each sport has to do is to work out actually what are the kind of categories that it wants to reward and what gives advantage in those particular sports, and that's what you build the rules around.
So to end this session, let's look forward. It's Vienna 2024, it's Lyon, France 2025, the dates are fixed. Any particular subjects ETLSF will focus on for the next 2 years?
So, I mean, we started off talking about many of the barriers to this event. I think there are many people who still don't see themselves represented in an event like this. You know, it's still a very... what's the word to say? It's still very gay male dominated. It's still very, very white dominated. And there are still not enough of our kind of non-binary and young people and, you know, lots of the different kind of diverse members of our community participating well in the Eurogames. So what we're trying to push towards is to increase participation in some of those categories. We don't, again, have the answers for that necessarily, but we have established an equality commission amongst some of our members, asking them to look at this, asking them to make recommendations. We are trying to talk to the EU, actually, about funding some programmes to allow more women's teams to come, because there's some real inherent disadvantages for women coming as teams to Eurogames, and we want to work with some of those teams to overcome those barriers and to get many, many more women's teams involved. So those are some of the kind of aims for Eurogames. Behind all of that, though, is the continued advocacy work. And you mentioned at the start some of the rules from places like UCI recently. So the Cycling World Federation has now developed a very regressive policy. We've seen World Rugby producing a policy which not only says that trans women can't play sport or can't play rugby in the women's category anymore, it says that they can't play at all. You know, that is not right. You know, it's not right to exclude any.
It's like swimming and athletics, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
It's completely banned.
So there's a fight ahead, like behind the scenes in all of those advocacy spaces to continue to push that. There is no point in having the most progressive human rights framework that we've ever seen at Olympic level if sports are not going to understand that and work with it and implement it.
There's also a positive example. It's like when FIFA was thinking about making some rules for trans and inter people, the German Football Association immediately stepped in and said, here in Germany, on any amateur level, anybody can play wherever anybody wants to play. Mm-hmm. About professional level, we're going to discuss, but in amateur level, and that's pretty high in Germany, everybody can play. And they will stand against FIFA, whatever FIFA will decide. That's a good example.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier, that when those rules are being implemented, we must keep telling sports bodies that they only have to be implemented to a certain level. Actually, as soon as you start to get to amateur levels and recreational levels and grassroots levels of sport, they just don't become applicable. So that's absolutely right, I would say. I think if we continue to use some of those examples, I think German Football Association is a great example. I think the Dutch sports agency have produced a fantastic toolkit for their sports governing bodies, and we're seeing lots of little pockets of that good practice emerging. We need to keep kind of pushing that right across sport and really challenging some of the big sports governing bodies as well, because at the moment, you know, they're hiding behind the fact that they have complete autonomy over their sport, and it's our job to keep them on the ropes.
It's our job. It's a big job, it's a long job, and we need a lot of guts, but we have it. We're going to fight. Thank you very much,
Absolutely.
You, for the interview.
Thank you.
Ganze Sendungen und mehr findest du auf queerupradio.ch.